Hello, ladies and gentlemen of America. I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hi there, and thanks for that wonderful introduction there from my lovely girlfriend, Jen, who has got it slightly wrong. I'm not just for the ladies and gentlemen of America. I'm actually slightly aiming towards UK-based sellers, but I'm definitely experienced in selling on Amazon in the USA. So welcome to the podcast. I'm Michael Veazey, and I'm your host for these podcasts, for better or for worse. Quick background on me, I'm not a professional podcaster, far from it. I am a musician and I also teach music. I love teaching music if it's to the right people, but it's not something that I'm wild about teaching to beginners who are basically either talentless or not working very hard in most cases. So sadly, that doesn't do it for me. So that's one of the main reasons that I want to be successful at Amazon FBA seller, so that I can get away from little oiks playing the piano very, very badly for me and get towards playing music for people who love and appreciate it, and also to work with people who really appreciate what it is I have to offer and what music has to offer. So that's a very quick background about me. I started with FBA about 7 months ago, and the business has turned over in the USA about $22,000 in that time since last December 2014, which is no massive shakes compared to some people who've started off and turn over $30,000 a month, but it's going the right way. I've now just put a second product into Amazon USA, and I've also just started selling on US products in the UK. Why I've started this podcast is really because I've always wanted to have some kind of radio presence. That's been one of my fantasy careers. And actually, I realized recently that although I know people who are having fantastic training in Amazon from Amazing Selling Machine and other such people, there are loads of people out there who would love to do this, but are not in a position to either shell out for the training, or they've had the training, but they've now feeling a bit isolated and they want a, you know, a comforting voice in their ear, to put it at its most basic, and also some guidance and some real life experiences to share. So that's what I'm about here. I was inspired by Ryan Daniel Moran from Freedom Fastlane and Scott Volker of The Amazing Seller Above All. He's a fantastic podcaster. They're both based in the USA and they sell on Amazon.com in the USA. So I thought there was room for a British voice in this, and especially the British experience of selling from the UK, but selling to the Americans on Amazon.com. And that's really who I'm after as an audience. A lot of Americans will also find value in this, because selling in America at the end of the day has most of the things in common with the experience of being based in the UK but selling in the America. There are just a few differences when it comes to things like, for example, getting your first reviews and so forth. We can get into that in detail. So what to expect in this podcast? Basically, I'm going to share my journey as I go. To start with, I'm going to tell you how I got to where I am now and an overview of my journey, following which I'm going to crunch straight into some structured training. So I want to do a 5-part series, possibly 6 parts, giving you in detail, step by step, the steps that I took to create an Amazon business. Then we also want to do question and answer sessions to answer your questions and to deal with the biggest problems that are blocking you from moving forward. And last but by no means least, I want to do interviews with FBA celebrities, either based in the UK. I'm lucky enough to know quite a few successful UK-based ones, or also the guys from the US, where we have a lot to learn from as well. So if you want to check out the show notes for any of the links, you need to go to amazingfba.com. That's F as in Frank, B as in Bertie, A as in Alpha. Amazingfba.com. If you want to ask a question, which I'd love you to do, go to amazingfba.com/ask. And if you also have any ideas about interviewees who would love to be interviewed here and who would benefit you, then let me know about that as well there. That's all I have to say today. Thank you very, very much for listening. I'm really looking forward to hearing your questions and getting to know you over at the blog, amazingfba.com. Do go check it out. Go check out the podcast that I've mentioned. Check out the show notes for this podcast number one. Meantime, go do your research. My advice is go and look on amazon.com and just start thinking about what products are selling, what things that you buy, and just get yourself familiar with the whole platform if you haven't been using it as a buyer before. And next episode, the rubber hits the road. See you then.
Hello folks, welcome to Amazing FBA. Just a very quick message here, a message from our sponsors, as they say. The private label process course, the PLP, is available on a special offer, a Prime Day offer, as I've called it. And I've taken a leaf out of Amazon's book, which is that their Prime Day keeps getting longer and longer. It's much more than a day now. Our Prime Day has lasted 4 days, but it is ending tonight on Friday, the 19th of July at midnight UK time. So if you want to get the PLP course for half the usual price, just go there and put in the word Prime, P-R-I-M for mother E, and you will get it for half price. As I said, this is a time limited offer that finishes midnight on Friday the 19th of July 2019. Hey there, this is Michael from the Amazing FBA podcast, episode 340. Speaking to you here from Italy, so excuse any bad sound quality in a slightly random background. We're in just some back streets in an Airbnb in a really lovely place called Sanremo on the Ligurian coast in northern Italy. So maybe today's episode is appropriate though to be speaking to you about this, because this is about outsourcing the day job, which is something that we don't tend to talk about very much with the Amazon people. Everyone assumes that anything you're going to outsource is only ever to do with your Amazon business, and rightly so, because it can very quickly become very time consuming to do customer service emails, which is the classic thing people outsource. There's lots and lots of things we've talked about and will continue to talk about on the podcast. But for those who are starting out, sometimes the only way that they're going to get time to create any new business, including an e-commerce business, but anything at all really, is to reduce the time they are spending on other existing things. And in my experience, this is absolutely critical. The number one thing that kills would-be Amazon business owners, that's to say those who are pre-revenue, who don't have any sales yet and never get to that point, is a few things. First of all, it's uncertainty about product selection, which we've talked about many times and will continue to talk about. But the second thing is that they give up because they just don't have time or money, and time pressure is always there. So one of the ways to deal with this, as I discussed with a client recently, which is what made me think about this, is to outsource some of the day job, especially if you have a business of your own, which quite a few people do. If for example, I've worked with gym owners or park owners, people who have their own sorts of home-based business, I don't know, roofing companies or something like that. Anything really, a plumber, anything you want. It doesn't have to be a knowledge-based business that you outsource, but there are quite a few tasks within a physical type business, for example, that you can outsource that are admin-based. So let's talk about this. The first thing to say is remember to eliminate before you delegate. And before you even do that, you should measure before you act, really. So excuse my hands typing the, like, if you're seeing the video version of this. The first thing is measure before you act. I mean, before you start doing things, you need to look at what you're already doing. Or put it another way, before you start planning to outsource things, you need to just get a handle on what is it you're doing all day. And actually, it's a very revealing thing. As many, many people, including, for example, Aaron O'Sullivan, who we've interviewed for the podcast, James Shramko of Superfast Business, any one of these people who are great at outsourcing will tell you to measure what you're doing for a period. I would say take a week. I use toggle.com, T-O-G-G-L.com. Very, very handy device. I'm using it right now to measure the fact that I'm recording a podcast. And it's very revealing to go back through your activities over a time. I'm somewhat obsessively trying to measure it because I think I'm undisciplined in my time usage, which I think is right, by the way. But if you measure yourself even for a day, you may discover with a shock that if you're honest and you actually measure the amount of time you spend on email, for example, you might be deeply shocked, or the amount of time you spend on Facebook if you're really honest and really actually measure it. Networking on Facebook, I mean, it's a profoundly bad idea, by the way. Okay, so that's what you should do or not do is another topic, but we've got to talk briefly about that. So the first thing is measure before you do anything. What are you actually doing all day? Then the other thing is define outcomes. And this is really, really important when you're about to delegate things to people. Like I've been discovering recently, I've been working very hard on creating a team and developing outsourcing processes with people in the Amazing FBA podcast, and particularly for the new podcast, the 10K Collective podcast, which, by the way, is geared to more advanced sellers, 6, 7, and 8-figure sellers, etc., and upwards. So if that's you, go and check that out. Just go to 10kcollective.com if you want to find that out. But the point being that I've been working on this and actually realized that I thought I was clear on outcomes, and some things we're trying to achieve are fairly straightforward, like a certain number of downloads per episode and things. But The outcome you want from a task becomes really critical once you try and outsource it. But the other interesting thing about outsourcing is, or basically delegating in any form to anybody else, is it forces you to think about what you're doing. And you quite often discover that you do stuff, but without being very clear why or what outcome or what result you're wanting from it, either short term or long term. So I think before you start giving things to people to do, you need to look at what you already do, define the outcomes of your business and define the outcomes of your tasks. And you can go very big with this, but even if you define the outcomes of your business as a whole, and then the maybe for the next year, next quarter, and then how your tasks feed those goals, I think you're going to discover that actually a lot of what you're doing can be eliminated, which is the next thing. So quick recap, measure before you act. What are you actually doing at the moment that's taking all your time up? Second thing is define your outcomes. What are you trying to achieve with your business? Let's assume you have your own business, but even if you have a job, you may have a degree of autonomy. And if you do, you're going to define what the company wants you to achieve over the next year and how you're going to achieve that. And also what outcomes you want for your own career within your company. The other thing is then to eliminate before you delegate. And this is so critical. If you wouldn't be prepared to pay somebody, maybe in the Philippines, $3 or $4 an hour to do a job, then why are you doing it? Why is anyone doing a job? If it's so lacking in value that you wouldn't be prepared to pay anyone at all, then I would suggest you shouldn't be doing it at all. And if it is of value and needs to be done, then you should probably pay somebody below British minimum wage to do it, or American minimum wage. I don't know what the minimum wage is, depending on which state you're in America. I know it's quite variable. Minimum wage in the UK, I believe, is about £7 an hour, so about $9, $10, depending on the exchange rate. If you're not prepared to pay somebody minimum wage, should you really be doing those jobs? I mean, you've got to watch your overheads. They say overhead walks on two legs. I get it. But really, if it's that useless, then you need to either cut the time you spend on it in half, in which case you could probably delegate it because you've got more efficient, or you just need to get rid of it, right? Certain emails, you just should probably not be responding to some emails, junk emails you probably shouldn't be responding to at all. Even if you're just responding angrily and self-righteously, just forget that, just move on. Don't do that. Life is too short. What else? Probably should not be hanging around Facebook, going through groups which are allegedly useful and doing quotes research. I really think actually you should be giving that to a VA, because they'll be more disciplined about it, because you're going to be saying to them, I want this specific outcome. If you're ever, here's a general rule of thumb, if you're ever on social media without a very specific reason to be there, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, in my case, whatever your poison is. For me, I can take or leave Facebook, which is ironic because I have several Facebook groups that I run for Amazing FBA, the principal one being Amazing FBA's free group. You can get there by going to amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book, by the way. But I run several Facebook groups, but I'm not really that addicted to checking Facebook. My wife really is quite fond of it, mostly to see cats falling off tables. I, for some reason, get addicted to YouTube videos, so I stay away from YouTube. But whatever it is for you, whatever your poison is, these things are designed to be addictive. Don't be a user of them. Be a person who creates addictive content, and then you're going to make money rather than lose it to somebody else, right? Again, a broad discussion can be had here, but broadly speaking, attention is a rare commodity now online. And if you give your attention to somebody else, you lose, and you eventually give them money, or you're giving something more valuable than money, which is your time and attention. Whereas if you attract time and attention from other people, i.e. being businesslike, then you win. I mean, just to put it simply, be very mindful indeed of social media. Emails, the classic thing to eliminate is checking emails more than a couple of times a day. I get down to once a day now that I check emails, because it's somebody else's agenda for your time. And yes, you've got to take care of it if it's customer service particularly, but we all get addicted to that. If you have an audible alert on your phone for email, turn it off right now. All right. And I would suggest the same for everything. I don't think you should have an audible alert on anything. I don't even have my phone on, in the sense, if you want to talk to me, you're going to have to make an appointment. And I make no apology for that, because when people do speak to me, generally speaking, it's by appointment. And then generally speaking, we have an intelligent conversation, which serves both of us. So try and get yourself out of bad communication habits. In other words, bad communication, ironically, meaning being overly open to communication and thus never really doing anything properly because it gets interrupted all the time, right? So that's a huge thing. Elimination is really, really important. So before we outsource, let me just quickly recap. measure what your current activities are. Really break it down and be honest, be brutally honest. It's not for anybody else's consumption, right? If you're spending hours a day on Facebook, recognize it. The second thing is eliminate, stop doing that, right? And the third thing then, yes, as I said, define outcomes. And again, the outcomes and elimination work together such that if you are doing stuff and it doesn't, once you've defined what you want to achieve with your business or your day job for the next year, 3 years, even if you wish eventually to give it up in favor of working on your Amazon business, you still need to have a plan. And if you want to, you know, make a certain amount of money from your day job and this activity you're doing a lot of by your measurement does not contribute to that outcome, you need to cut it right down, or if you can, eliminate it. So having got ourselves ready to outsource, let's look at some typical VA tasks for a small business owner. I'm just going to make some notes here. Forgive the slightly amateur's video. I don't think I'm going to be able to give this to the usual or the outsourcer, Daniel, or I'd say outsource is part of my team now. Really, he's a freelancer, but got his own business, but very much a core part of the team for me. And the irony is, a lot of the time as business owners, we worry about things getting done less well when they're outsourced. Chances are it's going to get done better because you're paying somebody and making their self-worth, if you like, within the realm of the business, attached to the idea of doing a job well, and you're paying them for it. It's their job. They own it. They're probably going to do a more thorough job. Generally speaking, the most slipshod podcasts that I put out are the ones I put together because I haven't seen it coming. In this case, I was a bit ill. I got behind at the beginning of this week and on holiday. So I'm putting this one together myself, and it'll probably be a bit messy. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Sometimes done is better than perfect. However, just note, this is an example of when I haven't outsourced because I haven't seen things coming. And guess what? It's probably going to be lower quality than usual. So that's something else to bear in mind, that this idea that we're going to get lower quality work from outsourcing, generally not true, because it forces you to create a structured way of working, and structured ways of working generally produce more professional results. Just a little side note here. So typical VA task for you may not, unless you haven't got a podcast, it's not going to include editing podcasts. So I wasn't going to include that. One thing, finances, very typical task to outsource. A lot of us have really messy finances, me included. I've never really been very disciplined on that. And that's very bad for business. You should be, particularly if you're running an e-commerce business. But even if you're talking about a non-e-commerce business, you should get clear about this. Before you get creating the most monstrous set of accounts ever, it's very, very clear, particularly with accounting, to be clear what purposes accounts fulfill, right? For example, a corporate tax return. If you own or run a micro business defined by the European Union, and assuming you're in the UK, as under 2 million euros a year in turnover, that counts as not a small business, a micro business. You can do very, very simplified tax returns if you are a sole trader, or corporate tax returns if you have a company in the UK. Now, all countries vary greatly in their tax return, you know, their tax legislation and requirements. So I'm not suggesting everything is as simple as that, but it's probably the case that you can get away with a lot less complexity than you think. The thing to do is, number one, talk to your accountant, and number two, create the simplest possible set of records that you need. No, not smaller than you need, and no more complex either. A lot of people, myself included, tend to go from 0 to 100 in the realm of accounting. So we measure nothing, and then we start measuring everything. The truth is, for a corporate tax return in the UK, you probably need to know the value of the balance sheet at the beginning of a period. So for example, for an Amazon-based business, it would be the value of the stock plus any cash you've got. Normally, those businesses don't normally own property or vehicles unless they're very established brick and mortar or brands for a long time. And you take that at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, and the difference between the two is your profit. And there aren't that many more figures that you need. I mean, there's a few, right? I'm not an accountant, but it's not that complex. That's the sort of thing you really need to know. Make sure you know what things you need to know, what you don't need to know, and then get those bits of information. For Companies House in the UK, and again, everywhere works differently, you need to give a return there. That's pretty straightforward. VAT returns are quarterly in the UK. In some European countries, they're monthly. Obviously, if you're US-based, you don't have VAT as such, but you might have other things. Those are all externally imposed requirements on you by tax authorities of one kind or the other. And they have very specific requirements and you have got to hit them, but also you don't need to get any more information than that. So if that's all you're needing, then that's actually probably fairly straightforward. The next kind of accounts you might want is more, I mean, the Amazon realm, really, but it may apply if you have a physical product, which is if you have a physical product business exists off Amazon, then you want to know gross profit by product. And the reason for knowing that is so you can choose whether to continue or expand product lines or, you know, reduce them or just stop selling them. And again, that is not actually a big complicated set of accounts. I mean, for an Amazon type business, but any kind of e-commerce business, I guess I don't really have a lot of off Amazon experience with that, but it comes to the same thing, which is your total landed cost per product. That is, manufacturing cost, freight, if you freight it from overseas, or even if you get it delivered from your own country, any import costs, if you're importing, and then, fulfillment costs once you send things out the door to customers, whether it's you or Amazon doing that. So you should know those costs. A lot of people, the day job or the day business or does not have those components. But again, if that is what you're wanting to measure, you can use fairly simple software for that for e-commerce, and you don't need to get involved in really complicated, excessive amounts of accounting if that's all you need to know, because that's part of management accounting. And management accounting is there to help you make decisions basically and run an orderly business. And there's no point in measuring everything if it doesn't make sense to you, because management accounting is for you as the business owner to make decisions. And if you don't understand the accounts, you won't be able to use them to make decisions. Ergo, it's a waste of time, right? It's doing something because it seems like you should, as opposed to for a really specific purpose, right? Coming back to what I was saying. Management accounts as a whole for business, I do think you probably should have. Overall, that is going to take a lot more work in my experience. I'm not an accountant, but it's going to take a lot more work to put together than just the tax accounting, which actually my experience is relatively straightforward because the government wants to know fairly simple figures normally, right? Again, talk to your accountant. But full management accounts will take a lot more work. I mean, only do it if you're going to use it. That's what I would say. So what sorts of tasks might you want to do? Let's think about that. I mean, a lot of the time, for example, you might have taking receipts by photo. That would be something you probably have to do if your VA is abroad and upload them. The VA would then assign them to Xero or QuickBooks or Wave, to name but three of the popular accounting apps, put them in by category and cost center. You need to make sure you train them up in that. And it might be that you know, it depends who you're looking for, but you might want to hire somebody who's already a trained bookkeeper and work with them to make sure you're clear about what you want. My experience of outsourcing accounts has been a bit patchy because I think I didn't have any kind of clarity about what I was trying to get from it. I didn't communicate with my VA there. And I also, what else did I do wrong? I think basically I didn't understand the accounts either. So I think you need to work with your accountant and outsource, if you like, the structures of your accounts to an accountant before you then, you know, who's probably going to cost, make maybe depending on your wage, a similar amount of money to you or more than you, before you then outsource to a low paid person to actually implement the bookkeeping, right? So outsourcing doesn't always mean finding somebody cheaper than you. Sometimes it just means finding an expert to set things up the correct way, such that you then can outsource it to somebody cheaper than you and get it off your plate. So that's one possible task. Other tasks might be sales. That's another classic task. Outbound calls, for example, that will need some training. You can be a good return on investment with the right person. I do have a VA in the Philippines, Jack, who I'm working with at the moment, who's a trainee, but probably going to offer him a job. He's probably not listening to this, but he's doing well. He knows that I like his work and he's a very positive guy, but he's done quite a lot of outbound sales work and his English is not perfect, but he's very, very positive and kind of courageous. So he's got the right personality. So they can be found. They're not easy people, but then salespeople are never easy to find either, right? The people who can survive knockbacks and be charming and persuasive are not easy to find in UK, USA or abroad for that matter. But with the right person, that could be a great return on investment. There's not something I've personally put Jack to work on yet. He's doing some work from an American company at the moment, doing some outbound sales, but that is definitely something I'm tempted to get him working on, probably get him to phone up e-commerce business owners who are doing, you know, 7-8 figures and invite them to consider joining the 10K Collective or the £1 million Mastermind. So if you're listening and you're in that category, you might be getting a call from one of my VAs soon. Inbound calls, again, you need good training, but a good return on investment, the right person. They're probably not simple, immediate tasks to outsource. Emails, inbound and outbound emails, customer service emails. That's a great thing to outsource, but with the caveat that you really need to get somebody who understands your business and your systems. For me, for example, I could definitely do with somebody doing that. Haven't got them on board yet. Why? Bit tricky to outsource because I have lots of different tech systems in my business. So you have Kartra, for example, which is the membership system for the PLP course. We have and by the way, that's something else I meant to say, that we have a sale on with the PLP course, the Prime Day. So if you get yourself over there, where we go to amazingfba.com/PLP, that's a private label process. It's a video course for getting from A to Z with know nothing to getting your first private label launched, a private label product launch, I should say, within a few months. You can get that for half price today. So it's going to end, when I say today, if you're listening on Friday the 19th of July, it's going to end at midnight British time. So get yourself over there if you want that. But for example, it would be a little bit hard right now to outsource customer service for that because the systems are a little bit complex and would take a bit of learning. I mean, I've learned them. There's no particular reason why. I'm not a particularly technical, amazing person. I've got a programming background or, web development background. So, I'm sure that could be learned, but are you just going to make sure they get it right? Because obviously when they're dealing with customers, it'd be tricky. I think research is a fantastic thing to do. And actually quite often research is the sort of thing when it can be two things. Either it doesn't happen, because you're too busy doing the stuff you need to do in your day job or business, or, you spend hours on Facebook in a very unstructured way. Whereas if you give somebody a clear objective, for example, I might say, okay, I want to get myself on other people's podcasts as a guest. And this is something we've been implementing, recently. So what I need to do, I need to say, okay, this is a kind of profile of the kind of podcast where I think I can give value and they can, you know, find me a relevant, useful guest and they will bring me audience, and go and have a Google and create a spreadsheet with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different bits of information in fields. And that's a perfect little test. I think research is a perfect first job for an outsourcer to test them out. And I would give the same research to 2 or 3 people at the same time. I've done this before. So other possible tasks, your little projects, amendments for your website. That's obviously going to be for a web developer. But again, there's some amazingly competent web developers available, particularly India is the traditional place people look right now. I find that Eastern Europe's great. I've got a Serbian guy who does stuff for us who, I can't remember what his hourly rate was. It used to be about $8 an hour. Maybe it's $15 an hour. So £12, really competent guy, does a lot of stuff for us. And is very responsive. So again, you know, if you're doing too much web dev stuff, unless you have a web development background, even if you can learn it yourself, doesn't mean you should. For example, if you could get on the phone to 20 potential prospective customers or, you know, older customers, old customers you've used here in the past and haven't been with you for a bit, just give them a ring and just have a chat about what their needs are. And if you can land yourself a nice lucrative bit of work, that's worth hours and hours and hours and hours of you swearing at a computer when you could be outsourcing it to somebody else. So that's definitely something you should probably be outsourcing. I'm gradually persuading myself to do that now. When I hit a wall, 2 times out of 3 now, I will send our guy a quick Skype and say, hi, can you sort this out? And he just generally does. And it's maybe an hour's work for him. So it costs him $15 or whatever it is, even less. Whereas it would probably take 3 or 4 hours out of my life. And also I'm going to be swearing at my computer at midnight and my wife's going to be complaining. Now, if that's you and you're stuck in your day job, then there's no way you're going to build an Amazon business in that situation. So, outsource it. So the next thing then, apart from possible tasks, where to find good people? I think freeup.com is very good, as with 3 E. So freeeup.com. run by Nate Hirsch and Connor Gilvan, who've been on Amazing FBA several times. They are specifically geared to e-commerce, but actually they've got more and more general abilities in their staff now, so it might work for you and your business. They're generally in America, in the lower 48, so that'll be about 8 to 5 hours behind the UK if you're based in the UK. If you're based in the States, you might be in the same time zone. That could be really useful. If they're in the Philippines, which is the other place they have people, you're probably looking at 7 hours ahead of you in the UK. And if you're in the US, you can think of it differently again. So it's about 8 hours ahead of GMT, basically, at the moment. So, sometimes you want to think about where they're physically going to be based. Free up people come ready trained, which is great. Saves you a lot of time and energy. They've done a lot of pre-selection as well. And they are, they will also replace somebody for you if they drop out while they're in the middle of a job, like if they're ill, which happens often, or if they just quit, which surprisingly often happens as well. So there's a lot of advantages for that. And having just gone through a process recently with trying to find and onboard new VAs of my own, it is a long and painful process sometimes. People don't turn up for interviews. You have terrible people apply to you. When you do get them on interview, they're bad. I mean, don't get me wrong, on the other side of it, some great people. But if you're just starting out and you haven't got much time to spare, then it's great to hit the ground running. Free up tends to start from about $5 an hour for Filipino-based people, which is pretty decent, actually, considering that they will also replace them and they come ready trained. That's a pretty good value price, I think. If you go around the Philippines, you can hire anyone from $2 or $3 an hour yourself, but quality people tend to be a bit more. So honestly, $3 an hour is probably the minimum for decent people. What else? Then we've got Upwork, which is a pretty decent place for finding people. I found a lot of good East Europeans there, particularly places like Serbia, Romania, the same kind of guys that come and work really hard in the UK as EU immigrants right now. You need to think about the sort of personality type you're looking for. Are they fast learner? Are they articulate? Can they manage upwards? And then you just think about skill sets as well. And this is a too broad an area for me to get into now. With a selection, I think you need to look at the CV in the background, look at the ratings on Upwork, which is another good reason for using someone like Upwork or Fiverr, and then give them an interview. I personally would interview them on Skype, get a feel for, are they quick on the uptake, the level of spoken English. It's not critical that people be good at spoken English if you're going to communicate in writing, but it gives you a flavor. I'm personally more comfortable with that, and I want to be sure that I'm hiring people who can think on their feet. A couple of other things. Test tasks. Research is a really great first task. Bookkeeping's okay if you give them a small amount and check it. I'm not sure about CRM, as in customer relationship management. I think that's a bit complex. I would use that down the line probably. So here's what I would say the three basic steps are to summarize for you. Action one is capture and clarify tasks. What needs doing? If possible, measure your time, for example, with toggle.com. What doesn't get done, especially things that you know you should be doing but could bring in cash, for example, contacting guests. I think the second thing to do is, as we said, so apart from defining what needs doing, look at what you're actually doing and look at what you're not doing as well. Second action is the elimination piece. I think that's really important. I think before you do that, you define your business objectives by area, and then look at, are you achieving your key performance indicators, and then just start getting rid of things that doesn't actually do any good. There's a lot of things you do, you'll discover if you look at things, just won't do any good. And then I would look at the usual suspect places. So that's really, as we said, Upwork, FreeUp, and Fiverr. Those are probably the places for me, I would say. Look locally as well. Sometimes talk to your network. Sometimes outsourcing locally can be the best possible thing to do, especially certain things. Outbound sales might be very, very good to have a native speaker, for example. And I think the other one is creating email copy. I think copy that's designed to persuade is best created by a native speaker, and actually not just a native speaker, but somebody very skilled at writing. It is not actually an easy thing to write good persuasive emails or good persuasive web copy, and that's a massive part of anyone's business or life if you are in sales or you have a sales component to your day job. Anyway, just some thoughts. not entirely a sort of finished system, but we've got much more sophisticated people coming on the podcast to talk about outsourcing within an e-commerce context. But I just thought some ideas to get your brain moving in terms of outsourcing stuff if you want to make time to create an e-commerce business in the first place. Because as I said, just to come back to what I was saying at the beginning, just to wrap up on this, I really think the most important thing that you can do to give yourself a fighting chance is get enough time and enough money devoted to developing new business. And if you don't do that, it's going to be very, very hard to make any real go of it. So this is all part of a subset, if you like, of the how do I make time in which to grow a business thing. So a business demands a lot of time, energy and money to start with. And you kind of plant the seeds and water them and work really hard to feed the plant in the hope that one day it will pay you back. And it is worth it from what I've seen with my friends selling businesses left, right and center now, which are e-commerce based for $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 or more, but it's a long slog. So prepare yourself for that and make a decision. I think that in the end, that's a very personal thing. But if you are going to do it, if your decision is yes, do it, then clear the decks. And this is part of doing that. Thanks for listening.